This is Near FM
90.3.
My next guest, former academic Alan Tuffrey. We are going to chat today, and something, Alan, actually I think is very, very timely that we should be talking about this, because there's a lot of angles to this that we have to get through in the next half an hour or so. We're going to talk about stress, we're going to talk about uncertainty, and we're going to talk about pandemic stress. Now, the first thing that I want to talk about, and I'm going to start to take this in reverse order. We are hearing that the government, I think, is meeting today to discuss the new legislation. It would appear that despite the state of the country, they are going to go on their summer recess, as they call it. So this legislation is going to be put through, I think they're hoping to have it in before the end of the week. Now, this will allow people to go into restaurants and bars again, people who are fully vaccinated and who have recovered from COVID and can prove both of those things. Don't hold me to it, friends. That's roughly the parameters of what we're talking about at the moment. My question to you now, sir, do you think that a lot of people now will be maybe stressful about going back into an environment that they haven't been in for a year and a half?
I do. My age group is the older age group, the first group to practically, well, not quite the first group to be vaccinated, but I'm middle 70s. I think there are people of my age group who've lost confidence about going out and are probably going to be quite reluctant to go on public transport and into crowded places. Now, I've been training myself carefully to come back in, because I've had a couple of trips to town in the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks since we've been let out a bit. I've been going into town, and I've been popping into the art gallery. I've had a few cups of coffee sitting on the street. I've even had a couple of pints sitting on the street, watching the world go by. Very pleasant it was, thank you. Now, next week, maybe, or a couple of weeks' time, I might be able to go back into the pub. I don't think the pubs are going to be, for a while anyway, they're not going to be as they were, hugga-mugga, people falling over one another and shouting and roaring perhaps for a few weeks yet. But wait till we get to September and we got the senior football finals or All-Ireland finals. Different then, of course. But I think a lot of people are going to take their time over this. And I think certainly talking to some younger people of my acquaintance who are not yet vaccinated or not fully vaccinated, I think they're going to be very wary about going into those kinds of environment. And I think that's right. I think a proper caution is in hand here. And I think we're going to probably keep going. A lot of the practices we've developed, the better hand washing, the better coughing and sneezing hygiene practices, and I think mask wearing certainly on public transport. I have no intention of going on public transport without a mask anytime soon, if not ever. And certainly in crowded places, I think we do that. Now, when we get to concert halls and theatres and so on, then that might become a different kettle of fish. We'll have to see how that goes. But we'll just have to see how it goes. The prognosis is, and I think this is what they're basing it on, is that because of the high take-up of vaccines, people are less likely to be seriously ill and less likely to be hospitalized and therefore and less likely to die. So we can all live with a dose of flu, if that's what we get. Flu is not nasty enough, or something like a bad cold. We can all get through that pretty well. A few of us will succumb, but most of us can get by. So I think, yeah, there will be some reservations, and I think that's quite proper. I think we do well to be cautious.
Alan, I'm going to try and keep it on this theme if I can, because there are so many aspects of this that I wanted to talk to you about, because I would always and ever defer to your superior intellect and knowledge on matters such as this.
Tony, you say you're an awful plumbosser.
Ah, yeah, but it works, you know. Anyway, to get back to the serious topic, and this is an extremely serious topic, and I'd like your opinion on this. There are a certain cohort of people who have... a huge majority of people who look at the figures every day of the week, every day when they're print, when they're published, they look at them. But that within that group of people, there are a certain cohort who only extrapolate the negatives from those figures, insofar as, and I have seen it myself, you know, like cases going up, in my opinion now, in my opinion, is not that big a deal. I would be more inclined to be watching hospitalizations and ICU. That's the real barometer. Yeah. But we see cases going up, and then maybe hospitalizations and ICUs. Now, they seem to have been fluctuating. Now, give or take, this is sort of a general statement, I suppose, in a way. Mm-hmm. 5 or 6, one way or the other, for the last week or 2 weeks. That's sort of, in relation to the case numbers going up, that's not really a bad place to be in at the moment. And I think the CEO of the HSE, Paul Reid, pointed this out yesterday, like that so far we're doing okay, and in some cases we're doing a lot better than okay. But yet there are people that will see an increase in hospitalizations or a slight increase in ICU numbers. Now, maybe only one or two people, but there's ferocious panic straight away.
Yeah, they're taking the negatives. There's such a thing as too much information. There's quality of information and amount of information. Now, I have a RTE News or something on my app, and every day at about 6 o'clock, it gives me the latest figures, pop up on my machine. Now, I have no doubt I could go and stop the news popping up on my mobile quite easily. And I glance at it and I say, oh, yeah, it's much the same as yesterday. But I know, and as you imply there, plus or minus 6 people on a caseload of 500 and something is neither here nor there. What might be more interesting is if in a week it goes up, if it's 6 people, then in a week that'd be, or 5 days, shall we say, that goes up 30 people. Now you're looking at that and you say, is that significant? Well, 30 people in 500 is still very small. So
my point would be, Alan, is that like what people need to factor in here is that there's a lot more testing going on at the moment than what people might realise. So the more you test, and I'm not going to for 1 minute go down the Donald Trump road here. But it's quite obvious that the more people you test, the more positive cases you're going to get. But when you take it as a percentage of the amount of people who have been tested,
correct and right, yeah,
the number is actually reducing. But now, I would be in 100% agreement with you, and I don't have the figures here at the top of my head, but I think it's something like 16 people in ICU yesterday. I'm almost certain this is around that figure anyway. It could be out by one. Now, if next Sunday there was 47 people in ICU...
Correct. Now you're worried. Yeah.
That's a case for concern, is the point I'm trying to make.
Look back a couple of months now, and where were we? We were about 220 people in ICU. And capacity, absolute max capacity, less than 230. We were at the pin of our collar then. And now it's 10, 15, 20, that sort of number. That's probably manageable. Now, it's no fun being in ICU, and it's very complicated. And the failure rate, as it were, the death rate out of ICU is not altogether inspiring. So, I think about 20% of people or something die in there. Somebody with more knowledge may want to correct me there. But I think it's of that sort of order. Don't come out alive from ICU. And it's a very hazardous and stressful business, and recuperation is very slow. But I think in some ways we'd be better if we had a weekly report of the COVID figures. And what they gave us is what's called a five-day moving average. So you average the last 5 days. And tomorrow, you average the last 5 days counting from tomorrow. So you take one off the one end, add one the other end. And the 5 days, because you're averaging out the very small fluctuations. Because people aren't used to handling those kind of numbers. And they look and say, oh, it's up 2 today. Oh, that's terrible. And your point is well made, Donny, about the increased testing. And it's what we need to know is how many people you're testing and how many of those are proving positive. It's a bit like the drink driving thing. You know, they say, so many people were done. How many people did you test? And we don't know that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the very same thing. Yeah, your point is actually excellently made there in relation to that. I mean, if you arrest 100 drunk drivers in a weekend and you've tested 500, that's not good. But if you arrest 100 drunk drivers in a weekend and you've tested 10,000 people.
Yeah. Not so bad.
You understand?
Still 100.
And that's a kind of what I'm coming at here, Alan. And I don't want to make little figures, and I don't want to make little of COVID. But this is really what I'm coming at: that people's uncertainty and stress. It seems to be still 6 months ago. We're at that level of stress and uncertainty.
Yes, I think that's right. A friend of mine made the point the other day. I was a cup of tea and a bun somewhere. Suitably distanced, etc. And she said, well, only about 20% of the people who test positive become significantly ill. For most of them, it's not a big deal. It's like having a bit of flu or a bad cold. And I think that's also true. So when you see, 500 cases, that's 500 very sick people. No, it's probably not. It's people who've got headaches and dry throats and maybe a couple of swollen glands for a few days,
or maybe nothing at all. They may be asymptomatic as well. So I think
that's slightly scary.
I think that's something maybe that people now look. Don't get us wrong, folks. Neither Alan and myself are intimating that you should let it rip and cut loose and do what you like. Definitely not. But I think the point that we're making is that we're trying to put across the fact that you should actually be trying to reduce your stress level, and particularly your pandemic stress level. What's the difference then, Alan, with uncertainty? Because I would imagine that if you're uncertain about something, you'd be inclined to stress yourself about it.
Oh, yes. I think uncertainty and stress, you could nearly swap the words round. I think stress is to a large extent caused by uncertainty and loss of control, which uncertainty, I suppose, gives you as well. So they're very closely related, I think. What I think the stress of this, what I prefer to call the present unpleasantness, and I'm sorry for inflicting this topic on your listeners, or our listeners, I should say, because on the whole, I regard talking about coronavirus and all this stuff as not a good subject for polite company. But here, we'll make an exception today, because it's actually a very good example of how things work. And I think we look at these things, and then, you know, the politicians seem to be saying different rules every day, and they're doing something different in America, they're doing something different everywhere else. What's right and what's wrong? And that creates uncertainty for everybody, as well as the kind of detailed stress that you mentioned. So we don't know, and there's also no end in sight. We don't know when it's going to happen. And some people get very grumpy about that. And I think you have to take a step back. I'm a great believer in taking a step back and taking a wider view of things. You think of where we were in January of 2020. We'd only just heard about COVID. It had only just happened. We knew nothing about it. We knew this disease was serious. It had just got out of China and it was beginning to appear all over the place. We had no information at all about this virus. And so scientists all over the world and doctors are doing great work. They're collecting data, they're centralizing data, and new data is coming in almost hourly. And once the scientists got together and grips on this and the funding started to come in, there were new experiments being done on groups of people collecting data practically every hour. And the results are coming in daily. And then, of course, in science, what happens is you get some information and that raises more questions. How does this work in this age group? How does it work in the vulnerable? All these other questions. Does it work in different socioeconomic groups and so on? So you've got all these questions. Every one of those questions probably needs a separate experiment to do it. And when I say, and then you've got all the different vaccines. Now, we've got 10 or 11 vaccines, maybe more now. All the vaccines, different age groups and all the other groups. The way you examine these things is by clinical trials. You give doses to people and you try out and see what the effects are. Those are very difficult to organize. You need huge numbers of people. I think the early trials had 40,000 people in, which is the number you quote to people if they say, these are experimental drugs. Well, actually, 40,000 people is not a bad sample to look at to see does it work. And more have been done since. So that, the situation was so fluid, so little knowledge to start with. And then the problem is for the scientists to get this new information fitted in with what they already know about how viruses behave and this particular viruses behave. And then they've got to try to integrate that, which is hard. And then, of course, they've got to try and give some advice that politicians can use. Now, we've mentioned how sympathetic we are to our politicians over this issue. Scientists have one kind, they live in one kind of world and they deal with one set of information. Politicians have to make real world decisions. What are we going to do with this information? Are we going to have another lockdown? Are we going to extend the lockdown? Are we going to release the lockdown? What will the people wear? What can the public put up with? And the classic example of that was last Christmas. The politicians, I think, made the judgment, and it was their call to make, that we as a people would have gone burlesque if they'd locked us down for Christmas. In fact, we would have ignored it. And that was probably the judgment they made. And, of course, all hell broke loose afterwards because cases went through the roof.
And, of course, it should be pointed out to people that when that happened, the difference this time round with the lifting of restrictions, number one, they're being eased at a much, much slower rate. But number two, we did not have one vaccine administered at that stage. Look at where Correct. We are now in relation to vaccines. So, I mean,
yes,
while we're not,
a big difference.
While we're not advocating, as I have said already, that people let rip and cut loose and do what they like, we are in a totally different place now to where we were. The disease hasn't changed. It has even morphed and developed and changed and gone in different directions. But the vaccines are working. And most importantly, as you pointed out earlier, Alan, the hand washing, the face masks, the social distancing, that's working.
Yeah. And I think if we're sensible, we'll continue to do certainly the hand washing and the masking in crowded places. We've all been to places in the last month or so. And when you're moving around in a space, you wear your mask. When you sit down, you take it off again, maybe, if you're having a drink or a meal or something. And that's grand. And I think that's... it's a bit like... Do you remember the smoking ban when that came in?
Do I ever?
One of the most remarkable things ever in the history of this country, I think, when somebody steps back and has a good look. What happened? Everybody said, you can't ban smoking in pubs. People won't put up with that. And it was sold, and fair play, I think it was Bertie Ahern was Taoiseach at the time, and sold it.
And indeed, the current Taoiseach was the Minister for Health who brought it in.
Indeed, was he? Yeah. Well, there you go. He was too. Yes, I'd forgotten that. And fair play to them both. They sold it on the basis of the health of the workers in the bars. The bar staff that we go into in normal times, you go and say, how are you, Mick? How are you, Pat, every week? And, they give you a pint and whatever. And these are people we know for the most part. No, not all of them, but we go into a place and we respected it. And we didn't smoke in pubs. Now, I wasn't smoking at that stage, but we didn't smoke in pubs. And that was the way it was sold. And I think the same principle applies here. If you go into a restaurant or a bar, there are a lot of young people working in those places who are not vaccinated yet. They will be, but they're not yet. And if we go into those places and we're careless, we could infect those young people. And they could become carriers and, we know all the rest. We've been through this all before. We know what happens. They can become spreaders through no fault of their own, or we could make them sick. None of us wants to do that. So we're just a little bit of cop on. That's all we're asking, isn't it?
Alan, I have referred to you in our chats for many months now as a former academic. Now, another word for an academic. We could stretch it that far. We could nearly call him a scientist. We know we know that when you're delivering lectures and when a scientist is delivering findings, it's based on research and it's based on facts. Have we anything that we can look back upon in previous decades or even generations. I know there's nobody around now, I don't think, maybe one or two people who were around when the Spanish flu was on the go. But we have had world-threatening events since. We have had a world war since. Do people react different today to the way they reacted to stress years ago? Alan, I suppose a good example of this now, Alan, and I presume there's a study on it somewhere, would be your own native country. How London has reacted to the coronavirus pandemic for the last 18 months, as opposed to how London reacted during the Blitz?
Yeah, well, I think the Blitz has entered the realms of mythology at this stage about how well people behaved. I see reports here and there that people didn't behave quite as well. But people behave and respond to stresses in different ways. We are all different, and people respond in different ways. Some people respond by internalizing the stress and possibly becoming quite ill, and their mental health suffers. And I've seen cases of that recently. And I've seen a lot of very stressed students in the last 18 months, particularly beginning of last academic year, September and October, and through into January, February. From the isolation, and in the case of students, entering college or not entering college, just trying to do coursework without the contact and the feed. So those stresses are there, and they're very hard. And people respond in different ways. Some people internalize it and become quite depressed. Other people throw their hat at it and walk away. Other people find other ways of dealing with it. And a lot of people, to use the modern term, reach out and contact people like me to find somebody to moan to, which helps. It's quite good. I'm quite good at listening to people moan. I don't know whether there are any good comparisons with this. Polio was never quite as widespread, I think, going back to the 50s and early 60s. I don't think people did live in dread of polio, days.
And indeed TB as well.
TB before that, certainly in Ireland, and certainly in Dublin, TB was a big thing again before all that. There was TB around. I remember contemporaries of mine being hospitalised for 12 months or so with TB.
Alan, something.
And of course, nobody really understood how it was transmitted at that stage. When we had a lot of TB in, say, the 20s and 30s, I don't think it was understood that that was carried by droplets, by people coughing and being careless, and of course being heaped up. What was that stat I heard yesterday? 1,000 people in 100 houses or something in was it Dominic Street? Something like that. One of the census, 1921 census or somewhere around about there. Huge occupancy, overcrowding. You wouldn't think you could get that many people in a room.
Well, we have seen certain communities where that sort of overcrowding has undoubtedly led to the spread of COVID-19 as well. Alan, just before I go on, we've only 2 or 3 minutes left. I'm looking at something here that says a certain amount of stress is good because it can increase your levels of production, whereas too much will decrease your performance. Now, I never walk into the studio without, we'll say, butterflies in the tummy before I start. And I think it's a good thing, because if you're not, if you don't come into a studio that way, you shouldn't be coming in at all, because you should have that certain level of, I hope everything goes all right now. I hope nothing breaks down or blows up, sort of thing. But
yeah, absolutely. I agree. I mean, I suppose my nearest equivalent would be giving a 9 o'clock lecture in the morning. You work yourself up. You've got a show to put on. I mean, if I'm giving a lecture now, I'm not broadcasting to the nation as you are. I'm speaking to perhaps 150 students out there who drag themselves in for a 9 o'clock lecture, for heaven's sake, which is some achievement. And they're in there, and they're agog, and they're waiting for the word. And I think I've worked up a fair head of steam. I've been going over my notes for the last half hour before I get into that theatre. I've gone through my slides, and I'm ready to go, and I'm fired up to put on a show for them. And it is a show. You've got to put on some sort of show and make your points as well as you can in the same way. And I think that's right. That's positive degree of stress. It's a lovely curve, actually. It rises up. It's a very shallow inverted V, if you like. So your performance rises steadily with stress, and so up to a point, and then it comes down again quite sharply. And that's the point. You want to be somewhere about three quarters of the way on the rising curve when you're going into your exam or you're going into the studio, whatever it is, or you're settling down, in the case of many students, settling down to write an assignment. You want to be sharp, and you want to be alert and focused on it. And that's what you're trying to do. If you get too stressed about this assignment because your life is not under control for whatever reason, then you say, right, I can't do this. It starts to become negative, and then you can quickly spiral downwards. And I think awareness of that anxiety curve is very useful. And we have to try and find our sweet spot on there, because otherwise your performance goes down. Whatever it is you're trying to do, whether you're trying to rear a couple of kids at home and manage the house and all the rest of it, if you get too stressed, then you're not going to be able to do it as well as you can. So I think focus on that. I think you have to try and decide what's important for you. Get rid of the less important stuff. The Americans have an expression, I don't always like to quote American expression, but this one is, I think, useful. Don't sweat the small stuff. Don't bother about the stuff that's not really important. Make a decision about it.
And I think more importantly is maybe take a step back, as you say, and decide what is important and what isn't important as well. Might be another way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Former academic Alan Turfrey. Alan, we totally digressed and diverged into all sorts of areas. We had a totally different, almost totally different track to go down. But we went down this one, and I found it extremely interesting. And I know our listeners did. My last Northside Today before the summer break for the month of August will be on the 26th of July. Just after 12 o'clock, I will be talking to former academic Alan Turfrey at that time on that date. Alan, until then, thank you so much.
Take care. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
This is Near FM
90.3.